Hey everybody, welcome to Melrose Sheltering in Place, take two. I'm
And
Nan.
I'm Christopher, and we were just chatting about some of the stuff that we are watching that's not Melrose Place because, believe you me, I would love to binge watch Melrose Place, but we can't because we are recording about a few episodes every other week on the podcast. So if we got too far ahead of ourselves, it just wouldn't work. We can only record so often, so.
Exactly. So this week I became obsessed with L.A. Law, a show I have never seen, or as Rose on Golden Girls likes to call it, La Law. And I've never watched L.A. Law before. It was on when I was a kid, but it was a little too old for me. I think it started in like 1986 and I was seven. And so far I am completely obsessed.
How many seasons are there of that show?
There are like nine or eight. There are eight seasons, and it is a total hot dude extravaganza.
Well, I might have to consider that when I'm done with Killjoys from Sci-Fi, because I finished Dollhouse, which only had two seasons. So I moved on to Killjoys, which has Aaron Ashmore, who played Jimmy Olsen on Smallville, which I watched 10 seasons of at the beginning of the pandemic. And then also Luke McFarlane, who was on Brothers and Sisters. And he makes a lot of his money by being in a lot of Lifetime movies, especially Christmas movies. That's some of his bread and butter. But Killjoys is a lot of fun. I'm enjoying it.
That would be so fun to just make your whole living being in Lifetime movies. I think that sounds kind of amazing. I mean, it's possible that there are definitely actors in the world who would rather be doing much more high-minded things, but I would love to just be the star of every Lifetime movie network Christmas movie.
I agree. I think, it's kind of like in that unauthorized Melrose Place story from Lifetime, where the agent told Laura Layton that, she needs to take jobs like Melrose Place in order to be able to take on the more challenging stuff later on. Like, I think an actor definitely needs their paying the bills jobs, and then they get to do what they want. It's kind of like Ewan McGregor. He freely admitted that the only reason he did Star Wars movies was for the money. And I thought that was awesome.
Yeah. And I mean, like, come on. Look, if you want to think about it this way, making a Star Wars movie just for the money beats the hell out of, I don't know, sitting there in an office all day looking at a computer screen just for the money. So, I mean, I'm here for it.
We're available if you want to make, if you want us especially to star as ourselves in the Melrose Sheltering in Place story.
Yes, we are also, we were just discussing earlier that we would like to do an all chubby remake of Melrose Place. So, Christopher, who would you play in the all chubby remake of Melrose Place?
Well, obviously, I don't want to play Matt, even though I am gay, because he just doesn't get the screen time.
It's
So
true.
I guess I would be Jake.
I was gonna say, I'm looking at this picture of you sitting in front of the cast, and I'm thinking Jake for you, for sure. Although it could be fun to play Michael, you
Yeah,
know.
I would not play Billy because I hate Billy.
Billy's the worst. I think I would wanna play, oh man, this is so hard. I think I would wanna play Amanda, TBH. I mean, it's a little typecasting, 'cause I'm kind of a bitch, but it just seems like it would be really fun. Like her or Sydney. I mean, come on. Playing Sydney seems like it would be a
I just had
blast.
the best idea. What if we played all of the characters and we just had different wigs and green screened everything in?
Oh my gosh, when are we doing this? Let's do it. We can put it on YouTube. Cool. Well, should we jump into so this week we are only talking about one episode because it is the season two season finale, and what a finale it freaking was. Oh
Yeah.
my gosh, this episode.
This finale is like what we were hoping the show would really be like when we got into season one. Like it has definitely arrived. Like the cards are on the table and we are here to play.
Exactly. This season finale is cool. It's got it all. It's got everything. It's got attempted murder. It's got
an implied gay kiss.
It's got runaway bride. It's got recovered memories. It's got just
It's great. And the name tells you everything you need to know. It's episode 31 from season 2 called Till Death Do Us Part.
Dun dun dun.
I'm ready to jump right in if you are.
Okay, let's do it.
All right. So, the show opened up with a really weird shot of a seagull sitting on a post. And I don't know if they did this without noticing, but the seagull was missing half of one of its legs. So
maybe that was like foreshadowing. Oh, maybe. And they're trying to be really Shakespearean.
Maybe like a shrew or a crow. So this was sitting on some pole by the beach house. And so of course we start with Kimberly and Michael, who have just finished boning, and she wants to go at it again, but Michael is spent and he just wants to talk. And I was gonna say she could at least give him a little bit of recovery time, but he could also just use his mouth. She makes him regret it by steering the conversation to the whole thing that happened while she was gone and supposedly dead. You know, like, how did you move on so fast when you thought I was dead? And he's like, well, that's the whole point. I thought you were dead. And, you know, don't forget, Sydney was blackmailing me because she knew about the blood numbers. Jane is over at Jane Mancini Designs, showing her Jane Mancini Designs to a potential investor. And I am happy to report that, I mean, we didn't get a really good look at the clothes or anything, but the concept was nice. She was talking about how she found vintage fashions from the 30s, 40s, 50s, all the way up, and she was reimagining them. And if y'all remember the stuff that she was making that she had Rhonda try on that time...
It was not good.
Yeah, like a bunch of overgrown blossom, layered 90s dress on top of dress under vest. So
it was very early 90s, like how everything kind of looked like a sack, you know, like.
Yeah. And don't forget a hat. You got to have a big floppy hat to go with it. Maybe some ruffled socks and some jelly shoes. I don't know.
All I wanted was hats when I was like around that time period. Hats.
Not gonna lie, I had a hat or two myself. I don't know if you remember, for guys, there was a period where berets were kind of a thing, like skater berets.
Oh, I don't really remember that, but that sounds.
I think sounds right. I might have even had an Airwalk beret, if you remember that shoe brand Airwalk.
Oh my god, Airwalk, yes.
Which was a good thing to have because I had a haircut that was to be kept secret from my grandparents.
That totally sounds like a thing. That sounds like a thing.
Do you remember in the 90s the shaved head except for long bleached bangs haircut?
Yes, skater dye haircut, basically.
Yeah, that's what I had. That was after I had what we used to call Vision Street hair, which is a regular haircut, but then you shave it up to the part so that the rest of it flops the other way from where your part would start. Kind of like what I have now, actually, now that we are in charge of my hair in quarantine. Anyway, that investor, Chris, invites Jane to dinner, and he says that she's the most beautiful fashion designer he's ever met.
Oh, man.
Which, because we can't just have a dude make the deal happen and then maybe hit on her once everything is signed, right? Like, he has to go and ruin everything by injecting himself into the feelings and all that. Anyway, Sydney trolls the Walk of Fame for sex work clients, and she ends up getting her ass kicked by three sex workers whose turf she found herself in. And they go hard. Like, she ends up in the emergency room, and Kimberly's on duty there and tells Sydney that she'll be fine and that Michael is going to pay for what he's done to them.
I mean, I'm here for it. I am here for revenge, yeah, Kimberly.
Me too. And the two of them working together. Ah.
Yeah, so good.
So she revisits Sydney once she's recovered, and she gives her some cash, and she tells her to stay off the streets and to meet her at the observatory that night. Now, I don't know how much that cash that was, but it was not $5,000. So Lauren is still probably going to come after her, but what are you going to do? At dinner, Chris admits that he's into Jane, which he didn't really need to do because he had already said that she was the most beautiful fashion designer ever, but that he will not let his feelings interfere with their business, and he has a proposition. He wants her to create an exclusive line, and he will supply the funding for production in exchange for a piece of the company. The only catch? She'll have to talk to Michael about it. So you know how that's going to go. Over at the observatory, which I love this, because all she said was meet me at the observatory. That place is huge. She didn't like say a specific spot at the observatory. And it was kind of like an out of the way thing. I don't know how long it took for Sydney to find her there. But Kimberly says that she and Sydney are both Michael's victim and that she came back for revenge because Michael is a menace and he must be stopped. Sydney admits that she'd also like to see Michael dead, and Kimberly says that they'll kill him together. Just like,
oh my gosh,
Diabolique or whatever movie. Jane interrupts Michael's breakfast on the deck at the beach house to get his signature for the fashion deal. But of course, Michael says that he needs to review it. And, you know, he has no intention of ever signing it anyway. Sydney and Kimberly meet at the park to eat popsicles and brainstorm murder ideas. Which is great because they're walking along the walkway, and I don't know, if I was with you at the park and we were brainstorming ways to kill somebody, I might just go find a place to sit where there weren't people all over the place to hear us talking about pushing somebody.
Yeah. Murdering. Yeah. People.
Like,
yes.
You know, they aren't quiet or subtle. And, you know, I mean, it's a different world. Nobody had camera phones back then, but still. Somebody could definitely overhear. They eliminate a few ideas right off the bat, but Kimberly says she has a plan. And she meets with Hot Dr. Levin to pretend that she's concerned about Michael, who she pretends is back on painkillers and talking about suicide. And she asks Levin to force Michael into counseling. And this whole thing is hilarious because she already went to Levin to basically say, I'm going to fuck with Michael.
I know, she kind of said some stuff to Levin previously that was basically like just short of, I'm going to try to kill Michael, just FYI. Don't worry about me. I'm good.
And now she's basically arrived to say, like, I don't even, why is she?
He's got a drug problem. Like, yeah.
Like, she may as well just say, I'm going to make it look like this is happening. But I guess she's giving Dr. Levin plausible deniability. So
exactly.
Yeah, I love that phrase, by the way. excuse me, Chris and Jane, walk along the water where he makes her feel better about that whole Michael situation by kissing her. Michael and Kimberly end their afternoon of boning so that he can meet with Jane about the business, But Kimberly spikes his pre-meeting beer with a sedative that she keeps in the cabinet, not even hidden behind some General Foods International coffee. Like, you can see the top of the bottle sticking up, and it's just behind one thing. Like, I don't know about you, but I would probably put it, like, anywhere else, like in my purse or under the sink in the back corner or in a box of tampons. I don't know.
I'm surprised it didn't have like the, you know, like just a white label with like a huge skull and crossbones on it.
Three X's. And I did want to point out something really funny. You get to see the label on the beer, and it's exactly like the Coors Light label, but the word Coors is changed to beer. And coincidentally, I learned something about this on TikTok from TikTok user Scott Prop and Roll, who's a props master. And he talks about how for a long time, companies were sending in not only free product, but with changed labels to put over it so that they almost got product placement because, you know, it would be like the Pepsi logo, but it would say soda. And the networks finally put an end to that. But I think this is an example of it because that looks exactly like the Coors Light label. But anyway.
Interesting.
A good follow on TikTok is Scott Prop and Roll. He's a lot of fun. Kimberly, go. So she spikes his drink with that sedative. And Sydney arrives. And they drag Michael out to the garage to put him in the car with it running. And Kimberly goes, her plan is she's going to be gone for a few hours to go pick up dinner at the Malibu Cantina. And Sydney is off to Palm Springs for the night or for several days, I guess. Jane wears a horrifically ugly hat to the meeting that Michael was supposed to go to with her and Chris. And when he never shows up, they go to the beach house looking for him and they find him in the garage and they save his life, which included Jane giving him mouth to mouth and Michael making a joke about what a great kisser she is or whatever.
Oh man, I was so bummed. I was like, dang it. I mean, I knew he wasn't going to die because we already know, spoiler alert, Michael's on the whole show. But yeah.
But, and man, so much happens to this guy. So I will let you take the next section about the other ones.
Okay. The other, welcome to the story of the other ones. Allison's sister, Meredith, RSVPs no to her wedding. They've only seen her a couple times since Allison was 10, and she had to get her dress via Meredith's College Alumni Association. Thankfully, Allison's pouting is interrupted by Amanda at the door, returning her bridesmaid dress. Amanda also makes sure to mention she's keeping the wedding gift she ordered. Jake and Joe are upstairs watching through the blinds, and he promises he'll break up with Amanda to be with her. Like, the idea, too, that Allison even ever asked Amanda to be a bridesmaid in her wedding.
How did that happen? Like,
I don't know. Like, this is a continual issue with this show where it's just, like, the only connection some of these people have with each other seems to be, like, living and working together. But somehow they're also, like, supposed to have these really intimate relationships, like being a bridesmaid. Yeah. But they hate each other. Like, Allison and Amanda have never liked each other. They have never liked each other.
Is it because Jake is in the groom's party and each dude in the groom's party has a corresponding bridesmaid?
I mean, I guess. But when I did two of the guys in our party, our wedding party, were married, and I didn't make their spouses my bridesmaids. I don't know those ladies. Like, that's not usually how it works, but very odd, very odd.
I guess there's just only so many women on the show.
So Hillary stops by D&D to see Amanda, who tells her that Chaz tried to seduce her. Hillary doesn't believe her, and Allison warns her that Chaz is likely to be up to something. Amanda asks her to promise to stay away for good, but Hillary says all she can promise is that there will be hell to pay. Allison picks up her parents at the airport and mentions that Meredith isn't coming to the wedding and that she's living in San Francisco. John, her dad, says Meredith has been in cults and brainwashed. Oh my God. Oh, sorry. And there's nothing to be done now that she's written them all off. Bruce calls Amanda into a meeting with D&D's lawyers because Chaz is suing for $10 million. She goes to Allison's to chew her a new asshole, a new asshole about it.
I guess that was at Allison's desk.
And Chaz is suing because Amanda sexually harassed him.
Supposedly.
just to be clear. Amanda spots Jake helping Joe with a crib that was delivered and goes to confront them. This whole storyline, this episode where Amanda is so mad because Jake is like helping Joe. And I mean, I guess Jake and Joe are like having a thing, right? Yeah. So she's kind of right to me. But the things that she sees happening are just stuff like Jake's helping her with a crib, you know, or whatever. Jake insists he's already said they're not together anymore, and she storms out. Bruce tells Amanda D&D and Chaz have agreed to binding arbitration. He's not confident and says Chaz has a witness who she correctly guesses is Allison. She approaches Allison to ask for forgiveness and for her to testify that she didn't see anything, but Allison can't lie under oath. Of course not. D&D's insurance company suggests Amanda should settle, which would require admission of guilt on her part and give Chaz give Chaz $500,000. Amanda refuses because she's innocent. Bruce tells her if she loses, she'll not only be fired, but he'll make sure she never works in advertising again.
You're never going to work in this town or this industry again.
Billy and Jake kiss and make up at the tux fitting. Not really kids. And Matt ends up stuck with Rob, Billy's best man. They end up at a Shooter's where Rob mentions Billy's ex, Donna Fleming, who he already brought up to Billy before. Matt, sensing gay vibes from Rob, asks if he's had relationships with girls or guys before. Rob admits he's gay, and Matt admits he's hot for him. So cute. Allison whines about the Chaz Amanda situation and tells Billy the whole thing's actually his fault. Outside, Rob says Billy doesn't know he's gay, and that it says this to Matt, and because like Matt and him are walking in the courtyard together. And Billy walks over to the window. I laugh because I was like, oh my God, every time Billy sees through the blinds. Sees them kissing.
Although we don't see them kissing because the camera cuts away, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is funny because, you know, in the unauthorized Melrose Place story, the whole gay thing was supposed to be the coolest thing about the show, and we got to strike while the iron is hot and have a gay person, and then they never show Billy do anything.
So Allison has another nightmare and calls out for her mom, who happens to be there. Billy comes in and pouts because mom is comforting her instead of him. Oh my God, Billy, you are literally the worst. Why is Billy the worst? That's what I don't, he's so bad. I hate him. You know what? Earlier when we were talking about how there were so many hotties on LA Law, it occurred to me that there are literally no hotties on the show. I guess Jake is kind of a hottie. But yeah, not enough hotties.
Well,
actual hotties on Melrose Place.
I think that.
I mean, lots of people think Billy is a hottie. I don't think Billy is a hottie.
Well, and if it wasn't for his character, I think Michael would be considered by a lot of people to be pretty hot. But
he definitely doesn't do it for me. I think he's just always got a bad haircut. I think, and his clothes, but it was the times. Jake waits outside for Amanda to get home to try to break up with her officially, but she says she doesn't need space. She needs someone to believe in her. So they bone. The next morning, Amanda asserts that all of Jake's strength and attention will be devoted to her, and they bone again.
I love how he had this whole plan because he wants to be with Joe and not her, And all it takes is Allison going, I just need somebody to believe in me. And Jake is like, to be in you? What? I can do that.
Jake is kind of a people pleaser. Mm. Like, I feel like if somebody standing right in front of Jake is like, I need this from you, he cannot say no.
Yeah.
He needs help. He needs to go to Al-Anon. Billy catches Matt in the courtyard and sends Allison back inside in her terrible robe so she can talk to Matt about Rob. Billy is sure Rob was experimenting, but Matt insists Rob knows what he wants and that Billy should talk to Rob about it. Chaz lies about everything that happened at the arbitration, and Amanda doesn't do herself any favors by calling it out. Amanda tells her story, and the judge doubts her from the get-go. Then Allison testifies that she saw Chaz and Amanda kissing. She also testifies that, in her opinion, they possibly boned on the conference room floor, like Chaz said.
Oh.
And now we are at the wedding
So, in one of the craziest things I've ever seen on this show, Allison's dad oversees the construction of a temporary platform above the pool. I thought the whole time that they would definitely, like, put swans in the pool and floating flowerscapes or something. But no, they just needed the room for all these people that they supposedly know.
I know. I was like, who are all these people at this wedding? And yeah, if you're going to do it in a cute courtyard with a pool, why would you cover the whole pool? Mm. Like, I could see maybe building like a little thing so that the bride and groom and the nuptials happen sort of like over the pool.
Yeah.
You know, like, but I mean, this is so weird.
Yeah. And, you know, they also missed a huge opportunity to have somebody end up in the pool.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. So true.
So of course Amanda's pissed off about this. It's early. She's trying to sleep and bone some more. So she comes out to fight with Allison's dad, and Joe comes out of her apartment and spots Jake with Amanda. Normally that would have been a thing that she could have seen through the blinds, but we needed Jake to see that he got caught. So, Allison successfully smooths things over with Amanda, and Billy awkwardly asks Rob about his gayness and is disappointed when Rob says he never found him attractive, which I have had this happen before where straight guys ask me if I think they're hot and I say no. And then even though they would never want to have sex with me or any dude, they get mad because somebody found them not attractive.
Well, and the thing, the assumptions that are happening there, because I mean, are they walking around assuming that every straight lady thinks they're hot? Probably. And they just don't ask because it's just like a given? Like, because why would you, it's like the assumptions that have to be made for them to assume that all gay guys would just think they're hot because they're a guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's so silly.
Yeah, it gets old. But guys are gonna guy, right?
Ugh, tell me about it.
So... Joe goes and tells Jake that they're just going to be friends before heading over to see Allison in her dress with bangs so poofy that they'll never be contained under a veil. Joe has a charm bracelet for her something borrowed, and Jane goes over to her place to get the something blue. Michael tells Jane that he will not sign off on the business plan, and Jane says that she should have let him die, and she will kill him if he doesn't leave her alone.
She's not wrong. Yeah. She should have let him die, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean...
That other guy was there, so she couldn't get away with
it. Right, yeah, it's too bad that guy was there, because she could have just, like, moonwalked out of there and been like, oh, I didn't see him, oh well. So Sydney gets back from Palm Springs and sees that the wedding is happening and complains loudly about it, but then she spots Michael and like yelps. It's great. So Kimberly, not wanting her to screw up their plan, sends her off to Shooters to drink and wait. John Allison's dad, which, by the way, I looked this up on IMDb. His name is John Parker, but Allison's mom is just Mrs. Parker, which is so appropriate for this family. I didn't look at any wikis or anything. I don't know if her name is ever revealed, but she's Mrs. Parker.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
John Parker tells Allison how proud he is of her, and she is so overwhelmed with emotion that she starts to cry, and he tries to comfort her, but he ends up triggering memories of when he used to molest her in the basement.
Okay, he says, he's hugging her, and he says, shh, don't cry, don't cry. And apparently, all of a sudden, she remembers that's what he used to say to her when she would be in the basement with him. And all I can think is, you're telling me from that tape to this, he's never said, don't cry. Or, like, no one's ever said, don't cry. Or she hasn't heard the words. Like, the idea, I don't know anything about repressed memories, so everybody take what I'm about to say, I guess, with a million grains of salt. It just felt a little bit like, how is this the moment that all of that came?
Well, it's because it was the moment when it needed to happen for the show.
Yeah, I mean, we needed this wedding to be disrupted. So
yeah.
It was a very dramatic way to do it. But
yeah, but
it just, I was like, really? Really?
But it was great, though. She, like, da-da-da-da. You know, her eyes get as big as saucers, and she tells him that she remembers everything. And she tries to leave, and he says that he will kill her if she says anything to anybody. So meanwhile, outside, you know, this is all taking a while, and the flute and the harp players are trying to keep everybody entertained, but Jane finally goes inside to check on Allison, only to find that the window is open and the dress is laying on the bed.
Okay. Also, in the time that we have to assume some of this stuff elapsed, like, her dad tells her he's going to kill her, walks outside. Jane is like, something weird is happening, and goes inside. Somehow, Allison got completely out of that dress, put on new clothes, laid that dress out on the bed nicely, and got out the window and ran away, and nobody saw her.
And wrote a note that Billy finds.
Like, I absolutely not.
Maybe she was already packed for a honeymoon and already had a bag and just jumped out in her bra and panties and the bag, and she could just grab some clothes from the bag. That's a fun image.
I mean, maybe. I just want to say, though, getting out of a wedding dress is hard.
Oh, I bet. In fact,
like, it's not a one-person operation.
Yeah, I didn't
honestly
even think about that. Would she even be able to get out of that dress by herself?
No, she would not.
Maybe we don't see it, but maybe she cut it.
I don't know. You can't convince me this makes sense. It's Melrose Place, yeah, though, so it doesn't have to. But yeah,
that is a great point, though. I didn't even think about the dress part. See, this is why we make a great team, because
I've worn a wedding dress before, so I know what it's like.
And I've worn a tux, and you know what? I have done a vest tux for my wedding, and I've done a cummerbund tux for a restaurant grand opening. And I need the vest kind because cummerbunds roll down on me. Anyway.
Good to know for the future.
So Billy does find a note from her. It's just like, I can't. It's not you. It's me. And so he pouts and he shouts and he punches and he kicks the closet door. And Jake goes out and announces that the wedding is not happening and sends everybody off. And Jane has left her apartment open wide for some reason, and Kimberly goes in and steals her car keys. Amanda heads over to meet with Hillary, who is out running errands, but gets home just in time to hear Chaz basically admit everything, super expositional, just wraps everything up in a nice bow.
He literally says to the person, like, that he did it to, yes, I did everything, and you'll never get me. Here's how I did it. Like,
yeah, I'm really glad that that Hillary was able to hear that, even though they didn't hear Hillary come in. Allison arrives at Meredith's house in San Francisco. While back home, Joe wonders if she stole Jane's car, even though Betsy, her car, would still be there if she had. John accuses Billy of not trying hard enough to find Allison, and Billy asks John what happened, since, after all, he was the last one to see her before she left. What did she say to you? What did you say to her? John sees that this is a problem and diffuses the situation by saying he's going to the police station to light a fire under them and to give them a picture of her. While Billy goes to D&D and Mrs. Parker stays home in case Allison calls, even though they have a phone machine.
The thing about the going to the police station, like, there's no reason to do that in this situation because it's very obvious there's no foul play. Allison ran away. Yeah. And when you're a grown up, you get to do that. Like, if you want to run away, you just get to do that. And there's no, like, there's no police searching for you.
Yeah, what are they going to do? Set up a roadblock and, like, compare a picture to everybody?
Like, the police would be like, we're not looking for, that's not a missing person. That's just a person who ran away. And they're a grown up and they get to do that, whether you like it or not. That's not, that's just, it's adults doing what they want to do. So,
So 2 points here. Her sister Meredith is played by famous actor Tracy Nelson, who, when you see her, you know who she is. She was on the Father Dowling Mysteries, is probably her biggest credit.
I was going to say she played that nun.
Exactly. And then I saw that she was on a TV show version of A League of Their Own, which I didn't know they did a TV show version of.
I didn't know that either, but that makes sense. Yeah. She looks a lot like, what's her name? One of the ladies from the movie.
And then the other thing.
And her dad was Ricky Nelson.
So that means that she is
Ozzie and Harriet's granddaughter.
And then Nelson, the twins, are her brothers?
Yes.
I did not know that. Matthew and Gunnar, that's their names.
Yes, exactly. I watched Ozzie and Harriet growing up, and I thought that Ricky Nelson was the hottest. Oh my God.
I thought you were going to say that you thought Gunnar and Matthew were hot.
I don't really remember thinking they were hot. I mean, they had that one song, I Can't Live Without Your Love and Affection. That song was a jam.
Yeah. And I thought it was funny how they both had, like, the blonde hair that was processed within an inch of its life. But they managed to get it very long, even though they treated it so bad. But then Matthew had bangs. And the only reason I know it was Matthew is because an MTV VJ said that the way to remember that was that the second letter in Matthew and bangs was A.
That is so dumb.
And then he was like, but wait a minute.
I wonder if he had bangs literally just so that fans could tell them apart.
Oh, probably. I bet you it was like a last minute decision by the record company.
Yeah, it was like a branding thing. It was like, well, chicks need to think one of you is the hotter one. And so we have to distinguish you.
Yeah, we got
to
pit you against each other.
So you get bangs.
I would have been like, I'm not going to get bangs, but I will put a black streak in my hair. How about that?
Yeah, bangs? Really? No.
Yeah, not into it. The other thing that I caught is that Billy was wearing a shirt. They never filmed where you could see more than the top half of his torso, but the top half of the shirt said the word do. So it might have been a do something shirt from his foundation.
Oh my God, do something. Do something. Do something.
Do something. Yeah, I watched that scene a couple of times just hoping to catch a glimpse of whatever it said. Because it wasn't just do it, because you would have seen the just. And I can't think of anything else from the 90s that was a do. So I think he wore his own shirt. So what happened after that, Nan?
Well, Christopher, Allison and Meredith have a heart-to-heart talk about John's abuse. Meredith says she confronted John when she was 12 and he threatened to kill her. Meredith and wants Allison to call Billy, but she's not ready until they talk to John. But Meredith says she can't do that. She's still afraid of John, but Allison says John can't hurt them anymore now that they have each other. But he's lurking outside, ready to kill them in the season three premiere. He's like stand the camera goes towards the window, and we just see him standing in the front yard, creepily looking in the
Not even
window.
trying to hide in case they look out the window.
Yep. Just before the judge can issue a decision, Hillary asks to testify at the arbitration. She tells them Chaz taunted Amanda and laughed about his made-up allegations, and that inspired her to do some research. His resume is all lies. The charges are dropped, and Hillary kicks Chaz out of her house and apologizes to Amanda.
Ooh.
Michael gets a message. Okay. Oh my God. This was the best part of the whole fucking thing. Michael gets a message from Jane Mancini. Not just Jane. Like, it's literally, he walks up, and the woman at the nurse's station says, "You got a call from Mrs. Jane Mancini. She wants you to meet her in the coffee shop across the street right now. It's very important." And he's like, "Jane Mancini? What?" And she's like, "Yes, the coffee shop across the street. Jane Mancini." They say it like 75 times. "Jane Mancini in the coffee shop across the street." It was freaking
Oh,
brilliant.
and I got this wrong. I'm sorry, before you proceed, I put the wrong person's name. It's Kimberly.
So Jane Mancini urgently needs to see him in the front of the coffee shop just across the street from the hospital. I was like, I already know what's about to happen. And then as he's crossing the street, squealing around the corner, comes Jane's car and runs into him. And it's being driven by Kimberly, disguises her. And then we cut to Jane at Jane Mancini Design. She's talking to somebody about a design, and the police walk in and are like, "You're under arrest." And then she's like, "My car's been stolen." And then they're like, "That car?" And the car's out front with the windshield all busted in. And she's like, "I'm being set up. I'm being set up." As they put the handcuffs on her. And that is the end of the episode.
And I'm pretty sure her alibi is pretty solid. She's probably been with Chris all morning, right? So.
Yeah, it like seemed like she'd probably been in the office the whole time. Like she was busy working with this person, and so like the idea that she was able to go drive, hit Michael, come back, park her car. I don't know. I feel like she will get out of this, probably not without some level of drama because it's Miller's place and they have to have something happen. But again, it's not exactly like an airtight case.
I really hope that we get a Jane Mancini mugshot out of this.
So yeah, that is the end of season two. Thoughts on season two? It was a wild ride.
Yeah.
It was a many things happened. It was a lot better than season
Oh
one, for
yeah.
sure.
I will say I am sad that some of the stuff that happened so quickly, like especially what's his name hiding in the ceiling and looking through peepholes the size of a deck of cards.
He's just disappeared.
Yeah.
Like, that's
It
done.
was like two episodes. It was not enough for me, but I guess if the writers are up for the challenge of having to think of three times as much stuff because they don't want to linger on any stuff for very long, that's just more for us, right?
This show completely operates on twists and turns, right? Like, we're not exploring any deep themes here. We're not. There's no slow burn. It literally, I think this show is just like trying to trigger that feeling of like, what's going to happen next constantly. And normally I kind of hate that. It's definitely the reason that I stopped watching Breaking Bad after the second season because it felt like it was just like, and what's going to happen next? And what's going to happen next? And from a show of that caliber, I was expecting a little bit more interesting things to happen, you know, not just twists and turns.
Yeah.
This show is literally just like a cheap series of twists and turns constantly. But that's the thing that makes it so watchable. Like, it's not smart. It's not like so many holes in the show constantly. I mean, we're just constantly pointing out holes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter somehow with this show.
Well, I think that also for the era that it was made in, it's like the ultimate get together and watch with people or talk about it at the water cooler, you know, like they really knew what they were doing in terms of just getting people excited about it because, you know, life was kind of boring back then.
Yeah, true. So true. Oh, by the way, I found Models Inc. on YouTube and started watching like what was labeled as episode one, but it seemed like it was coming in. It was really long. It was like over an hour long, but somehow it felt like it didn't start right at the beginning. But it didn't matter because it's not brain surgery. I could figure out what was happening. Sarah, the model, was at a party or whatever. But it looked like it was so bad. It was so bad. And not like, not even just in the same ways that Meryl's Place is bad. It was like, all I watched was kind of this beachside party that was happening for all the models and everything. And it just felt really boring and obvious. I don't know.
I do still have to watch it, but
Yeah, you should give it a shot for sure. But yeah.
trying to think of anything else from that era. I think I mentioned last week that we're also watching Babylon 5 and Farscape, right? Two 90s sci-fi things.
I think you mentioned
Yeah,
that.
I'm basically fully living in the 90s now for the most part.
The 90s, you know, the 90s. Nostalgia. The 90s. I remember the 90s, kind of, you know. Yeah, the 90s. I don't know what else to say about the 90s. But anyway, so season two, episode, I mean, season two, Melrose Place is in the can, guys. And any predictions for season three?
So one thing that I texted you about is I don't understand how Kimberly is going to be on this show forever when she's already going so hard at this. Like, she's really going for it. And how is she not gonna get caught trying to kill Michael? Because we know he doesn't die.
Yeah, we know he doesn't die. And also, like, she's just not even trying. She's just this, like, wild-eyed person that's like, poison him, put him in the car, you go there. I mean, it's just like, there's no, she's not a criminal mastermind. And yeah, I mean, I kind of get the sense, like, her vibe is almost that she doesn't care what happens to her as long as she kills him. So maybe she ends up going to prison, you know, and I
That could
don't
be
know.
hot.
Maybe that's a thing. But yeah, I have no idea.
I think it was a big mistake on her part to team up with Sydney because I can't think of a worse co-conspirator for anything. Because, like, Sydney is somebody who would definitely crack under pressure and admit everything. And, you know, basically, I get that she needed somebody to help drag Michael to the car, but maybe she should have just used a dolly instead.
I just looked up the cast for season three because I just wanted to. I'm trying to spoil things for myself. I was just curious if there's any major changes to the cast in season three, but it doesn't look like it, actually. I think we don't actually get any major changes maybe until season four.
The thing that I spoiled for myself that I can't wait to finally see is one time I just put Melrose Place in a gift search, like in Messenger or whatever, and Jane in a wheelchair came up. And I was like, that looks fun.
Oh man, who knows what that's about? I'm not gonna Google it. We'll find out. Anyway, fun
I'm
times.
also a little a little grossed out by how much time we spent listening to Allison talk to her therapist about how she likes to give pleasure during sex. And now we're kind of switching gears into her being molested.
Ugh, I know.
But I gotta say, I really did enjoy Courtney Thorne-Smith's performance when all the memories came flooding back and she freaked out. That was a good job. I like that.
Yeah, I mean, she's not got the best material to work with, but she's making it work.
Yeah.
So hats off to her. Oh man, I wonder who Jake's gonna pick. Amanda or Joe?
I think that he's gonna be with Amanda for at least a little while longer.
In real life, obviously I would be rooting for Jake and Joe. Like if these were real people, I'm like, Jake and Joe obviously is a better couple. But for the drama, Jake and Amanda.
Well, and so do you think that she stepped up her birth control game after her pregnancy scare with Billy?
Oh, I don't know. Do you think, are you like predicting another pregnancy situation with Amanda and Jake?
I mean, probably, because he wants a kid and she doesn't, so.
Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
We still have to have Joe miscarry.
Right.
Because she will. She just will. That's how these shows work.
Yeah, they faked us out this season, but there's no way she's having a baby. No. I refuse to believe it.
There's no baby on Melrose Place.
There's no babies.
And
no babies.
And, you know, as we've talked about before, they all have to be given the judgment-free option of having an abortion, but they all have to not have the abortion.
Right, exactly. I wish we would get an actual like Joe abortion storyline.
Oh, that would be the best.
That would be amazing.
Do you think that this might hopefully be the end of Allison and Billy?
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like, you know, they definitely were, you know, obviously the wedding was never going to happen. So I think that, for sure, this is going to be the end of their relationship. Cause like, think about it. If they try to get back together and Allison is asking Billy for like support through what she's going through, Billy's just going to get mad that she like, he gets mad if she tries to get support from someone else. He gets mad, though, if she tries to need anything from him. His responses are always like, you know, very get over it or, you know, what about me kind of situation.
Yeah.
So I just think that they might, maybe they'll try, but it won't last very long.
And I think that that means that any future romance for Billy has to come from somebody that we haven't met yet.
For sure.
Because Amanda would never get back with him, I hope. He wouldn't be interested in Sydney. He wouldn't be interested in Kimberly. He wouldn't be interested in Jane.
Absolutely not. No, I think we're going to get... Well, looking at the season 3 cast, there were some newer... there were some new people on the recurring... Not the main cast, but the recurring cast.
Is this when What's-Her-Face from Sex and the City is going to come?
She does show up, yes. Mm. I did not actually know that she was on this show, but...
I happen to know it. Like, right when we started the podcast, I saw her on a talk show, and she mentioned having to act with... what's the guy's name who plays Billy? Andrew Shue. And how much it sucked to act with him. She was like, he had a lot of very specific feelings about how the script was going to be interpreted by us and all the exact blocking and things that we would have to do. And I was like, that sounds like Andrew Shue slash Billy.
Well, now I feel better about the fact that I hate him.
Yeah, he sucks.
All right, well, that was a really good episode. I really thoroughly enjoyed it, and I can't wait to see what we get up to in season 3. Yeah. Maybe it'll just be like literally every episode Kimberly does something to kill Michael and it's thwarted somehow, and we just watch this happen over and over and over the whole season.
I'm ready for that.
I'd be into that.
And maybe also anybody who gets in her way can be
a target. Oh yeah. Like a bunch of collateral damage happens. Like somehow innocent people are getting actually murdered, but Michael somehow just like keeps on ticking.
Yep, I'm ready for it.
Cool. Well, you can see us on the internet at I am at Nanarchist on the Instagram.
And I'm also xtofer575 there. We don't care about Twitter anymore. I still use it, but I don't talk about using it.
Twitter is bad. It sucks. It's terrible.
And
it's bad.
A couple of episodes ago, I was like, I guess I'll give TikTok a try. And now I make tons of TikToks all the time.
I love TikTok. I don't really make TikToks. You make TikToks. I don't really make TikToks. I can't seem to like get over the hump of it. It just feels like, you know, crafting a tweet or even like taking a picture of something and posting it on Instagram with like a good caption is like not that hard. Coming up with a whole thing for a video, I don't know. I just see so many good ones. Yeah. I feel all this pressure. So I've made a few, but mostly for work.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of like an easy progression for me because I already liked doing Instagram stories, and TikToks are just kind of like a more complicated version of that. And you try to make them to be for like general interest rather than for just your followers. So, you know.
Yeah, because you want it to kind of show up on the For You page and for people who don't know anything about you to be able to kind of vibe with what you're doing.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's definitely, shout out to my coworker Elle though, because we are the comms team for the organization that we work for. And she's a big TikToker. So we call ourselves TikTok producers because we'll have meetings and we'll talk about concepts and then she'll make them and do a really good, amazing job. Mm-hmm. So I'm more of a behind the scenes TikToker.
Nice. A producer. I like it. You're like the Aaron Spelling.
Of TikTok, but I don't want to take too much credit because she does a lot of work and has a lot of really great ideas. So shout out to Elle, who is definitely not listening to this podcast. But,
well, you know, it's about time they started.
All right. Well, I'm going to go kayaking this afternoon.
Oh, fun. That's the other thing that happened. I tried for the first time in 20 years last weekend to rollerblade, and I fell immediately. I'm not giving up, but I need to practice like at a place where I can hold on to stuff, like, you know, a roller rink after my second. Oh, and I got my first vaccination shot.
Oh, yay. Yeah. I get my second shot next week. So excited.
Yeah, my second one is coming up soon. So pretty soon we will be the Vax Squad.
Yeah. And then I can travel. Yay. And come see you.
Yeah.
And I don't know, we can go rollerblading or something at a place where people can hold on to the railings.
That'd be fun. We do have a skate rink here, so.
It's a little, I got back on my skates for the first time in quarantine after several years. And it's definitely, there's a learning curve for the old body.
I didn't think it would be that way because I was basically born on roller skates. But, you know, I'm stiffer and bigger and...
Yeah, my joint situation is like vastly different than it was back when I used to rollerblade a lot.
Yeah.
God, I think about the shit my body used to do and I just think how, because now if I get up from a seated position wrong, it's all over for nanners.
You know, I haven't been able to sleep on my right side for like 5 months. and of course, when I fell, I caught myself with my right side. So, like, I'm just going to probably never be able to lay on my right side ever again, I think.
Yeah. Ugh, bodies. Yeah. Ugh, aging. The worst. Yeah. Ugh.
Oh, well.
Oh yeah, my birthday was this week.
Happy
So
birthday.
I'm 42.
Congratulations.
So I am definitely old. My therapist asked me yesterday about what I wanted for the future, and I was like, well, death is pretty imminent. It's coming any minute. So I don't really think about it that much. She was like, it's not okay, we should work on that. Anyway, fun times. All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening to Melrose Sheltering in Place.
We'll catch you in 2 weeks.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.